You're listening to the Corporate Expat Experience.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. Today is International Women's Day. And of course, with that, I invited an incredible woman to the podcast to share her entrepreneurial journey and how that journey of being a serial entrepreneur led her to creating a nonprofit aligned with the United Nations that is dedicated to supporting women entrepreneurs around the world. Founder and CEO of We Do, Women's Entrepreneurship Day Organization, and founder and CEO of Animal Fair Media, Wendy Diamond is an entrepreneur, an impact investor, animal welfare advocate, best-selling author of multiple books, and a television personality. Today, Wendy will share her journey, her insights into entrepreneurship, and finding that purpose that lights you up and propels you forward. She is an incredible force of nature, an inspiration, and I'm proud to call a friend, the fabulous and incomparable Wendy Diamond. Wendy, welcome.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I'm so happy to be on here. It's so excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor. I am so excited for today's episode. We have been working on this for a while, and it's so exciting to have you here, Wendy. So let's just jump right into it. You are an entrepreneur. You're a serial entrepreneur. You've had so many different businesses. What I want to know is, when did you know that you were an entrepreneur?
Well, you know, it's so funny when people ask that because, you know, I've been an entrepreneur my entire life. Literally, when I was in middle school, I used to get in so much trouble because I would bring gum in. And during recess, I would sell the gum to all the students, right? And they'd all be chewing gum. You know, and I'd get the gum like from my dad because my dad had restaurants and things like that. And I'd get it from my dad and I'd come to school and I'd sell it and they would buy it, you know, a piece of gum. I think it was like 10 cents or something, you know, and then they would come back to class chewing gum. And I used to get in so much trouble. Like I'd have to sit in this big bathtub in class because I sold them gum, you know, it was so funny. So I would sell pencils in school and things like that. I don't know. I've always just had this thing where I loved business. Right. And I loved, you know, I'm very like, I want to do it. I want experience. And that was like kind of my mentality, you know, and, you know, it kind of went through my whole life, right? So when I was in high school, you know, I dealt with some really, you know, unfortunate things with my parents. They had some mental problems that were very devastating to my family. And, you know, when I was really young, like at 16, I ended up having to basically take care of myself. So I had two jobs and went to high school. When I graduated high school, when I graduated from high school, I had the worst grades because, you know, what I was dealing with in high school, all the mental stuff and my parents and I had to go to work every day after school. I had to survive. And when I say literally had to survive. And so from there, I could not get into any college. And, you know, I was trying and, you know, I always, of course, wanted to go to really like prominent schools. So I was like setting them out and I kept getting denied. And, you know, and I realized like, oh my gosh, these grades, I don't even think I could get into community college, you know, and my aunt from San Francisco, she called me up. She's like, you know, where are you going to college? And I told her the story about my parents, because, you know, when you're young and you're like in high school or you're younger than that, you know, it's hard to talk about what was going on with your life. Right? Like I used to have to sleep on my friends' couches. You know, I had no home. It was like a kooky situation, you know, but you don't know how to express yourself when you're young. Right. And so what happened was she said, you know, you have to go to college. You know, there's got to be a college out there for you. And that's when we found a school called Pine Manor College that was in Boston, that was an old finishing school turned four-year liberal arts school for women. And that's where I ended up going. They accepted me. My aunt said, I'll take care of it. You know, just get a job, pay for your spending money and books. And that led to my life today. I mean, if I didn't go to that college, you know, which was primarily an international school, you know, girls from all over the world, from Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, everywhere, right? Went to that school. And if I wasn't exposed to that world, you know, I would not be here today. you know? And so what happened, you know, in college was I had two jobs in college because I was like, oh my gosh, I don't want to go back to Ohio and I don't want to have, you know, what happened to my family and to myself. So I was just always had this, you know, work ethic is I love to work, right? And, you know, and what happened through that was when I graduated, I sent out like, you know, because, you know, you can tell what kind of person I am. I sent out like hundreds of resumes, literally, you know, and I had like 7 internships in college. So I was always trying to learn and grow. And then I had the job and the whole thing. And when I sent out those resumes, I got a bunch of rejection letters. Like no one even hired me. Right. You know, I didn't know then, you know, that you have to go out to your network or your alumni or your whatever. I didn't, you know, we weren't told those things. Right. And so that led me to having to figure out my life. And, you know, after school, I, you know, moved to Istanbul, Turkey. And then I started my first business in Russia, which was I brought Valentino, Jean Frager Ferre, a bunch of GFT labels. They didn't want to flood their existing market. So we would buy everything like 10 cents on the dollar and ship it to Russia. Right? Crazy. Anyway, so that was my first job. And I did that with somebody I went to college with because I was a club promoter in college. So I knew, and I don't drink and I never did then. Right. But everyone needed to get into my club. So they had to like, you know, pay me to get in and stuff like that. And I was like the cool girl, cause I was out at the club and like, and that's how I knew like all these people from Harvard and MIT and stuff like that. Cause I was at a girls' school. Right. But all, so I was part of this whole European, like, you know, international crowd. And anyway, so that was how I started my first business in Russia. That was a little crazy. And so, and I was so young, but you remember, I didn't, you know, I don't know, you know, the greatest gift we all have is to never lose our inner child. You know, when we're young, right? You're always like, oh my gosh, wow. And I want to try that. And I need to learn this. And I want to watch that. You know what I mean? The whole thing. And you can never forget that in life. Right. And that's one of the gifts that I've gotten is like, I just am so excited about everything. And I, you know, because I had such a kind of crazy upbringing that I just have this whole thing of like survival and like perseverance and like, let's do it. And I don't have fear. Right. So that's what happened, you know, with Russia. I did pretty well, you know, and I gave the business to my partner because you can take a girl out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the girl, right? So I decided to go back to the United States after my little, you know, few years in Europe and stuff in Russia. And that's when I moved to New York City.
Wow, that's so much. And I love what you just shared about that childlike curiosity, that excitement, that zest for life, because you definitely exhibit that all the time. And it's so inspiring. So when you moved back to the US, what did you do then?
Well, so I moved to New York, right? Because where was I going to go, right? I was just in Boston. I was just in Europe. It was just like, I can't go back to Ohio, right? So I moved to New York. Again, you know, not sure what I was going to do. And I ended up meeting a homeless guy on the corner at the Plaza Hotel. And I saw him every day, right? He was always there. And I, you know, I can't, you know, I love people. So, you know, I kind of talked to him, you know, and I'll never forget like him telling me, I'm like, why are you here? You know, you have a great personality, you know? And he says he makes more money there than he would ever make at McDonald's. And people give him money. And that's what inspired me to go and volunteer for the Coalition for the Homeless. And I was on that band for about 6 months. I fed 1,000 people a week. Sometimes I'd go more than others sometimes. And I literally like fell in love with, you know, giving them each a ham sandwich, an apple and a milk. And like seeing these people like with these huge smiles, you know, being so grateful for that. And that led me to wanting to basically help these people. And that's when I decided to do 2 cookbooks. And the first cookbook I did was called A Musical Feast. And it was a cookbook. I met a friend of mine, she did a cookbook for her family. And I was like, oh my God, if I got celebrities to do their favorite recipes, we could bring awareness towards the homeless problem, you know, in America and especially in New York City at that time. And so that's when I decided to do the book. I went on a journey And I ended up getting 100 recipes from everyone from like Madonna to like, you know, Dolly Parton to all these amazing people. And, you know, I self-published it, right? Because I couldn't find a publisher. No one wanted to publish my book. So I self-published it. I got Nabisco to be one of my sponsors for it. And I went on a journey and I found all these like, you know, musical artists. And how did I, and people are like, how'd you find these people? How'd you do it? And it was just, it's just like what I say about life. Like, I just love people. I talk to everyone and I would tell them I was so passionate about what I was doing that, like, you know, people are like, oh my God, you got to talk to my cousin. She's the hairdresser of, you know, of Aerosmith. And like, it was just like rad. And that's how I did it. There's no other way, you know, and then I just kind of networked with everybody I knew. And so that was how I was able to get all those people for the cookbook, right? After doing that, we raised like hundreds of thousands of dollars for the homeless, Coalition for the Homeless in New York, Empty the Shelters, which was a national group. And I was on Oprah and I was on the Howard Stern Show, you know, and People Magazine and the whole thing for doing that project. And that just led me to like say like, wow, there's nothing better in life, like to work on things that matter. Right? Like, cause I felt it. Like I knew those homeless people. I was feeding them I volunteered for a long time, feeding them on the streets and seeing, you know, their and understanding their stories. And it was like nothing was going to stop me from creating that. Right. And the same thing happened with the All-Star Feast, which was one with all the athletes. I did the same thing. And that's when I was living in New York City and I was kind of alone. And I grew up with animals. Like nothing made, you know, growing up in my crazy life, you know, nothing was better than having animals in my life. They were like the only stable thing I had. Right. And I went to the city shelter. I ended up adopting a Russian blue cat and a purebred Maltese. And when I was like researching, I was like, how did I just get these unbelievable animals at a shelter, right? There's purebreds, right? And that's when I realized 12 million animals were euthanized a year. And that's when I said, wow, if I could bring, because remember my background, right? If I could bring celebrities and pop culture to the animal rescue world, we could teach everyone you could adopt every, you know, any breed, any size, any age, any color, right? And that was how I created and thought of Animal Fair, fairness to animals with a little take on Vanity Fair, right? Because that was like a huge magazine. And like, and it was, and that I created, so I, you know, I'm the first person to bring celebrities and dogs to the world, basically. And the whole goal was to bring awareness towards rescue, right? And so I launched Animal Fair. I self-published. I created a media company. I was the first, you know, premier pet lifestyle magazine in the world. At that time, nobody, dogs were barely in commercials. No one had dogs or celebrities at all. You never saw them on TV shows or anything. Renee Zellweger was the first person on my cover, her and her dog Dylan. And that's how Animal Fair was created.
That is amazing. And I love that you took social issues and challenges and brought them to the forefront the way you did. And it's incredible. And I'm sure that people are listening right now going, wow, this is, I could never do that. But it sounds like you just had no like concerns or worries that you couldn't get it done, that you just knew this was right for you.
Well, it's again, I saw the city shelter. I was there. I learned 12 million animals euthanized here. I'm like, how can people buy a dog when you can easily adopt a purebred, right? Like it just didn't make sense, right? And, you know, I had to figure out a career. I had to figure out something because I couldn't get a job, right? So I like, it was just, and like, you know, and it wasn't like I had money or whatever, you know what I mean? I had to make it happen. And literally I spent years, I remember calling Purina, Purina Pet. And I remember calling them and saying, oh gosh, can you advertise? And I created the first ever pet fashion show in the world where I got one of a kind dog. I got designers to do one of a kind dog outfits where rescue dogs would be like carried or walked by celebrities, right? And that's how, you know, we launched Animal Fair. Hillary Swank was at my premiere, you know, like crazy stuff. And clearly like Purina calling me at the beginning saying, you know, we can't advertise with you because you put dogs in clothing. I hope I have that email still, but like, I clearly like remember it. And now they create, now they have one of the biggest, you know, dog fashion shows in the world. Right. And it was, so it was like, you know, I was at a time when none of this was going on. I was like, why? Right. Like, again, that inner child of like, why, you know, why can't we do this? Why, let's do it, you know? And then just having that inner, like, oh my God, there's 12 million animals euthanized a year. You know, now, by the way, that number's down to 2 million. And it's because of celebrities and pop culture. You, no one can deny, like, if it wasn't that bringing this to the forefront. I mean, I, you know, Paris Hilton wasn't around with her dog at the time. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, so like, that was the whole thing. That was how it was done. And, you know, and so throughout that, you know, I created, you know, the first ever pet Halloween, you know, costume party for animal rescue. And I did all, I created the word Yappy Hour. I trademarked it, the whole thing. And then like, I think it was on Jeopardy or something. So I lost the trademark and everybody uses it now, but I don't mind people emulating us as long as they're supporting animal rescue and doing it for a great cause.
Well, it's such a worthy cause. And I also love what you said is, you know, they Purina said no at first, but you didn't take that no as the last answer, right? You went on and still ended up working with them, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. They became one of our partners, you know? So it's kind of, you know, so it's just, you know, I that's why I kind of like, whenever you say something to me, I'm like, always like, you know what? It's like, I don't know, no. And no means we'll figure it out some other way. Right. Or, you know, and everything I do is so pure. Like, it's not like I'm doing anything that's going to hurt anybody or, you know what I mean? It's just trying to help. Right. And bringing, you know, like pop culture and celebrity to it. So it makes it more that like everyone, because everyone in the world wants to help. You just have to make it really easy for them.
Oh, that's such a good point. Such a good point. And you did this for the homeless, you did this for animals. And then what was next? What did you do next?
Okay. So again, I was, you know, I was on the Today Show every month. I had a primetime show on CBS called Greatest American Dog, raising millions of dollars, you know, for charity along like the, you know, the couple decades I was doing it, and 10 books out, 5 TV shows, 3 Guinness World Records, a wing named after my dog at the Humane Society in New York, you know, raising hundreds of thousands of dollars for all the like small rescue groups around the country. And then I got a stalker. And the stalker basically created 50 anonymous email addresses to defame and slander me to everyone. It was crazy. I was dealing with, you know, and that basically ruined my life. The Today Show stopped putting me on, you know, the sponsors that were in our thing. She would go and stalk me, right? Anybody I was with, any brand or any kind of thing, she would then go send these emails. So it literally was one of the like hardest things like one could deal with, right? Because I spent my whole life building this. And it all fell apart. And she basically, you know, ruined my life in the animal world. So that was about 2011. And that was, you know, my dog at that time that inspired me to do all this, Lucky, who got the Guinness World Record for the most dogs, you know, photographed with celebrities, like literally was diagnosed with cancer. And that was like one of the hardest, it's like my child, right? Like that's me, you know? Like pets are my children. And so I ended up, it was really, really difficult at that time. And everyone at town who heard about it, you know, was calling me and saying like, oh my gosh, you know, how can we help? And a friend of mine who was at the Essex House on Central Park South said, you know what, let's do a memorial for your dog. You know, I'll donate the Essex House ballroom. And then this amazing woman named Harriet Rose Katz, who passed away, bless her soul. And she called me crying. I love your dog. You've done so much for animals. How can I help? And she was the most prominent event planner in New York. She did all the $1 million everything, right? And she called me and she says, I want to do this for you. And then we got a call from TLC Cake Boss. And the Cake Boss called and they said, you know, we really want to do a wedding. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to do a memorial. I will then get my dog married to whoever dog it is. And I will adopt that dog. So we went out to all the shelters and everybody and said, hey, you know, does your dog want to get married? Now note, they didn't have to live or sleep together. They just had to support and promote animal rescue and welfare together. It was never, you know what I mean? So So anyway, so that was how I created one of the Guinness World Record for the most expensive pet wedding in history. And we raised enough money for a wing at the Humane Society of New York. Everybody donated. We, you know, like I mentioned, the Essex House, and it was one of the most amazing experiences one could ever go through. And that led, you know, probably at that point, my stalker was at full, you know, going crazy on me. And literally at that point, I like, you know, I couldn't even like, it was just like, it was like a battle dealing with everything. I lost probably 50% of my friends. But what's really cool about it is it cleaned out for all the better people to come in, you know? So it's all good. It's all good. I look at it now that way, right? I didn't look at it then. And it was really hard then. And that's when my dad got really ill. And that was when I was able to go back home and take care of him at the end of his life, you know, basically, you know, saying to him, thank you for being so crazy. Because if you weren't so crazy, I wouldn't be who I am today, right? Like everything we go through in life is a positive. You know, whether you know it in a day, a year, 20 years later, right? Like everything we go through is there's something you've learned. There's something that you're going to say, wow, you know, if this didn't happen, right? So anyway, so that's, you know, and when my father died, I made a commitment that I would go to 2 new countries a year because I wanted to make a commitment to myself to live. Because I'm a Virgo and I love to work and I just get deep into it. I'm like the most passionate person, right? And so I just get deep into it. And so I ended up that it was like in December and I ended up going to Honduras, not realizing it was the murder capital of the world. And when I was there, I was at this boutique hotel in the jungle. We were supposed to be watching, you know, birds for a couple of days. And I was going cuckoo myself, you know, all these people from England that had a lot of money that are bird watchers were there, you know? And so I said to the guy that runs it, you know, where can I go? And he said, you know, I know this development director of an organization gives microloans to poor women. You know, it's a safe ride. You know, she's great. Why don't you just take, you know, spend the afternoon? So that's when I went on this journey and I learned all about the statistics of women, especially these women that were getting these microloans in this impoverished community. And, you know, I learned about 1% of venture dollars going to women founders, et cetera. I was supposed to spend a couple of days there. I met with a lot of the women that were receiving these microloans. And like one woman was 72 years old. She had 3 little kids that were her grandchildren. Her daughter passed away. The husband ran off. And that, you know, and she like inspired me when she, you know, had one room. She slept with these 3 grandchildren. And she was, you know, with the microloan from Adelante Foundation, that was the organization, she was able to open up the one room, you know, one window in her hut and sell Cokes and toothpaste and be able to afford $1 a month for those kids to go to school. And each story was like that. And it was just like, these women were empowered, you know? And, you know, when you are economically empowered, you have self-confidence, you have dignity, you know, you don't allow human rights violations, right? And so, you know, I just came back to New York and I said, wow, I looked at the statistics, 250 million girls that year were living in poverty. There was such little stuff about women entrepreneurs or women in business. I said, let me create, you know, I know how to do, you know, I know, like, I know how to get Guinness World Records and, you know, all that stuff. So I said, let me create a day. Because if we create a day, we'll create the conversation and we'll launch at the United Nations. And we'll basically create this whole movement. Think TED, like TED Talks, but WED. But instead of people talking about themselves and ideas, we will bring governments, business leaders, civil society, entrepreneurs, and investors together to collaborate to find solutions to economically empower women. And that was how I created it. I went around the world, called everyone I knew from college, and that's how we're celebrated in over 100 countries around the world. And that's how I created Women's Entrepreneurship Day.
That is so amazing. And how long ago was this, Wendy?
10-year anniversary. So that was in 2013. It's so, where does time go? Gosh.
Time flies.
I know. So that was, it started, yeah. So 10 years ago.
So this year, we do, Women Entrepreneurship Day organization is celebrating 10 years. So tell me a little bit more about We Do.
So, you know, Women's Entrepreneurship Day organization is, like, when I say we're similar to TED, people get the license and they're our ambassador, right? And then they do what we do at the United Nations. So in New York, we hold our event at the United Nations. But around the world, everyone does what I just said, is bringing governments, business leaders, civil society, entrepreneurs, and investors together. You know, we are the reason why We NYC was created, where they dedicate, I think, $50 million of the budget to support women entrepreneurs in New York City. You know, we're the reason why Mayor Garcetti in Los Angeles launched and dedicated billions of dollars of the budget to do grants for women entrepreneurs and women founders of Los Angeles. You know, we are all over, we created the first ever women in disability startup cohort to help disabled women become entrepreneurs. We fund thousands and thousands of women around the world, microloans to start their entrepreneurial journeys. So it's, you know, working on these projects to me, that's why I can't get the grin off my face, because I see what's happening and I know what's happening. And it just, you know, to be able to work on projects, you know, that mean something is like the best.
Wendy is definitely always smiling and especially lighting up when she talks about her work, whether it's with pets or with Women Entrepreneurship Day organization. What I love is that it's about women. It is focused on women and helping each other to connect and to support each other. It's very uplifting. Having gone to the event on November 19th, because that's something we didn't talk about. It's a very special day for women entrepreneurs.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. So it's, you know, and we also on, so every year, you know, Women's Entrepreneurship Day in New York, you know, but it's also in Los Angeles and San Francisco and India and all over the world, right? So what we do is we also honor the most pioneer women in the world, right? Because why did I create this? At that time, in 2013, nobody was talking about women entrepreneurs or women in business. It was very little, right? And in history, as we know, you know, I think Al Gore said he created the internet. Well, really, it was a woman named Hedy Lamarr, you know. And it's like, how do we bring awareness and give credit to women, right? Because women, you know, as you know, I'm a perfect example, is like, you know, we're not like, oh, we did this, we did that, right? You know, we're more like reserved. And it just, I think what we need to do from like, and that's why change happens from the ground up, right? We all talk about systematic change. Well, if you really want to change the world and have gender equality, we need to embrace everyone from a ground up approach. We need the top, but the top isn't going to change, because once they get to the top, they're like, I can't look down. This has been so hard. They just don't want to go there, right? And so it's just so key, I think, in life, is that we start from the ground up, right? Because I want, you know, I believe, you know, it's so important to teach us at a young age that you can do anything and you can be that person. And I think it's so key, because at the end of the day, you know, as you know, it's very rare when you find women at the top, but when they're up there, they're usually so serious because they fought so hard to get there, you know? And I just, you know, we can never lose our joy to be, you know, we can never lose, you know, having fun, enjoying the journey.
That was one thing for me that really resonated, because growing up in the corporate world, even though I came from a family of entrepreneurs, I was the one who took the different direction. I went into the corporate world, and I'm glad I did. I had great professional experience doing that. But I always knew I was an entrepreneur at heart, kind of started at a young age like you did as well. But that's the thing, is I would look for other women as mentors, and, you know, that I could aspire to be like. And there were very few women in leadership roles. And when they were there, they had worked so hard to get there that they were fighting to keep their place. So it wasn't always the easiest thing for them to advise the up and coming, which is one thing that was important to me to be able to do that. And I love that through WeDo that I have an opportunity to do that as well, to help support next generation. I also love that it's not just women there supporting the cause, that there's a lot of men there.
Because you know how like at conferences and things like that, it's usually like 70% men, 30% women, if you're lucky, 30% women, right?
Right.
We do the opposite, you know, because we need men. We're not like, we don't, you know, we're all about men. And what I will say about our foundation, the men have been more supportive than women.
Now that's really interesting. And I love hearing that. I've always been a big supporter of that, bringing men into the conversation. I grew up with four brothers and a dad and grandfather who were really supportive. I joke around that we had no gender bias in our family when it came to chores. My brothers wash dishes, I mowed the lawn, and vice versa. So my dad always, I never heard, oh, you're a girl, you can't do that. It was always, you can do anything you want. And I want more of that for women. And that's what I love about the spirit of We Do, is that you can do anything you want.
Exactly. And that's what I mean. And, you know, just when you look at, you know, the world today, there's so much opportunity, you know, and if you want to be an entrepreneur, there's never been a better time in history. There are so many opportunities. I mean, governments are dedicating millions of dollars in the budget to help women founders. There are more women investing in women and women entrepreneurs. There's more men. There are mandates, right, to invest in women, right? And what's really cool about it is just the future of AI and, you know, ChatGPT. I mean, listen, there's no better assistant in the world than ChatGPT. And I believe that whatever you want to do, whoever you want to be, there's no better time than now.
Oh, totally agree. Wendy, what is your favorite thing? I mean, obviously, there's so much here about We Do and what you do to all of your businesses, all the things that you do. But what's your favorite thing about being an entrepreneur?
Well, first of all, I don't even know what it's like to have a paycheck. I don't even know what it's like to have to someone pay, you know, have health insurance, or, you know, like, I just don't know that. Right.
Right.
And I think what's, you know, for me, this is all I know. The crazy I know is the crazy I'm fine with. So I only know, like, working hard, waking up early, working all the time, you know, I only know that, right? And I think, you know, at the end, it's a lonely journey. You know, you don't have, you know, unless you're an entrepreneur and you create the thing, it's really, I think, important, you know, to always just, you know, build your own community and your own circle around you and have those inner circle to support you. I think it's also very, very important, whatever you do, be passionate about it. Like, you just, you know, you really need to really want this to happen, because it's not easy to be an entrepreneur. You know, Women's Entrepreneurship Day organization, I thought would be the easiest thing in the world. I mean, we've gotten appropriated by a big organization that's run by a man that's not even an entrepreneur, that's an entrepreneur organization. Like, I've dealt with more craziness. And I just think, you know, it's not easy, and you just have to have, you know, passion. You have to have purpose. You have to have perseverance. You have to be peppy, because, you know, the way you communicate with people is how they're going to communicate back. And so if you are, like, all excited and you're going to make it happen, people are going to want to be a part of that. Right. And so that's why the key, like, the first thing you got to realize, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, if you're starting out and you want to start your own company, is you got to figure out, what is it I'm doing? What is the purpose? And are you passionate about that purpose? Right? Because if you're passionate about that purpose, people see it. They feel it.
Your passion shines through. Every time I see you, whenever I talk to you, I get energized and excited about everything that you're doing. And just even with my own stuff that I'm doing as a female entrepreneur, I get excited, more, even more excited about what I'm doing. So I thank you for that. So if people want to get more involved in We Do, how can they find you? What can they do?
All they need to do is go to wendydiamond.com. And if they go to wendydiamond.com, they can go get links to Women's Entrepreneurship Day. They can go to Animal Fair. They can see all the companies I'm involved with. And literally, they can email me on that website, wendydiamond.com. And I'm pretty good at, like, responding, because I'm, you know, like that. And, like, so yeah, that would be the best way to do it.
Fantastic. Well, Wendy, thank you. It has been an absolute pleasure having you here. Thank you so much. Any last words of wisdom or amazement that you'd like to share with the audience?
Adopt a dog.
I love it. So Wendy's jumping to get her adorable dog, Happy. Oh, so cute. Oh, love, 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 love Happy. Always with her.
And always there's no better gift in the entire life, in the entire world, than to adopt a dog.
I love it. Wendy, thank you so much. I so appreciate you and all that you're doing for people today, for animals today, for the entire world. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Woohoo!
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help support this podcast, please hit subscribe, leave a rating and review, share it with others, or post about it on social media. For show notes, links, to connect with guests and more, visit us at corporate-expat.com. And be sure to catch the next episode with more insights and inspiration to support your corporate expat experience. Bye for now.